Chapter 4, Part B. Focus groups. A group of approximately 8 to 12 participants assembled to answer questions about a certain topic is known as a focus group. Focus groups are similar to interviews, but they are conducted collectively and facilitated by a moderator. Developing targeted questions is important, as is inviting the right people who possess insight and experience relevant to the problem. Focus group sessions should be recorded and transcribed verbatim, with participants' permission. Focus groups are beneficial for understanding participants' thinking and perspectives, as well as for exploring new ideas and concepts. Participants can generate new knowledge and ideas, especially if they build off each other's remarks. Focus groups might also yield in-depth information about problems or potential fixes. They can offer insight into the client organization's relationships and communications and may provide an opportunity to probe relationship issues. Focus groups are relatively easy to organize and represent an efficient way to collect data from several stakeholders simultaneously. Focus groups also pose challenges. They might be expensive to conduct if participants are brought in from multiple locations. Finding a skilled facilitator can be difficult. Participants may be suspect of the process and have confidentiality concerns. Participants may also be overbearing, negative, or dominant during the session, so adroit facilitation is needed. If employees are angry or worried, their emotions can dominate. Focus groups can also generate voluminous findings that may not be generalizable if the participants are not representative of the organization or that may not be relevant to the issue under investigation. Finally, large amounts of data may be time-consuming to analyze. Consultants should hone their focus group facilitation skills, and resources for building this competency are listed at the end of this chapter. Direct observation. Suppose Nina watches people, meetings, events, work processes, or day-to-day activity in the organization setting and records what she sees. Nina is undertaking direct observation. This data collection method involves recording observations in the form of field notes. Stringer, in 2013, listed typical observations made in action research. Places, the context where people work, live, and socialize, including the physical layout. People, the personalities, roles, formal positions, and relationships experienced by participants. Objects, the artifacts in our contexts, such as buildings, furniture, equipment, and materials. Acts, the actions people take, signing a form, asking a question. Activities, a set of related acts, for example, facilitating a meeting. Events, a set of related activities, for example, putting on a training session. Purposes, what people are trying to accomplish. Time, times, frequency, duration, and sequencing of events and activities, and feelings, emotional orientations and responses to people, events, activities, and so forth. Direct observation has several benefits. It allows direct insight into what people are doing, avoiding the need to rely on what they say they do. Observation offers firsthand experience, especially if the observer participates in activities he or she observes. This is known as participant observation, and it is just as useful for observing what happens as for what does not. For example, a manager may tell you she involves employees in decision-making, but you may observe her doing the opposite. An observation might yield valuable details that offer insight into the organization's context and politics that organization members may miss. Observational data may also provide a springboard from which to raise issues that people would otherwise be unwilling to talk about. Direct observation also poses challenges. It may be impossible to determine a rationale for observed behavior. If people know they are being observed, they may alter their behavior. Observations may be clouded by personal bias and selective perception. One must avoid over-identifying with the studied group so that the observations are objective. This is especially challenging in the case of participant observation. Doing observation can be time-consuming, and access may sometimes be limited, depending on the type of organization. A consultant may have to sort through observations that seem meaningless in relation to the problem. Data analysis can also be time-consuming. Tips and wisdom. Effective observation. Doing effective observations requires planning, skill, and focus. Here are some tips to make your observations more robust. Number one, determine the purpose of the observation. Observations can be used to understand a wide range of activities in organizations, such as how employees respond to a new office layout, how customers engage with employees, how supervisors relate to their subordinates, or how certain procedures are executed. You should be able to state in one sentence the focus of your observation. The purpose of this observation is to document the use of personal safety equipment usage. Specify time, procedure, or location. Or perhaps you are more interested in the nature of interaction. The purpose of this observation is to understand what types of questions medical professionals ask during a clinic. Specificity saves the consultant from capturing a lot of extraneous data. In the first example, you might note the frequency and types of personal safety equipment used, and the conditions when it is not. In the second example, you might be interested in who is asking the questions, assumptions made about the cases, or what emotions are expressed. Clarity about purpose increases the likelihood of seeing what you are seeking. Number two, determine what is relevant to the observation. If you are observing participation and team dynamics during a meeting, what occurs during an outside interruption of the meeting is probably irrelevant to what is going on in the team. Number three, decide how to document the observation. Your choices include videotaping, audiotaping, photography, and note-taking. There's not a perfect method. Technology-assisted video or audio recording might subdue participants who feel self-conscious about the information they are sharing or are fearful of reprisals. Notes can miss key information and quickly lose their meaning. Note-taking can be assisted by creating a shorthand for participants. For example, EE for employee and MGR for manager. Practice taking notes to build skill. Use more than one note-taker and then compare findings. Finally, create a checklist for the observation to make it easy to record items, such as a list of behaviors during meetings, interruptions, new ideas, constructive criticism, building on ideas, etc. Number four, avoid interpreting what is observed and instead report it directly. So if you were observing personal safety equipment usage, you might say, "Person A did not wear safety glasses," instead of, "Person A appeared to be distracted and hurried and forgot to put on safety glasses." You will likely have to pair observations with interviews or focus groups to understand intentions behind behaviors and interactions you witness. Document analysis. Document analysis involves reviewing relevant records, texts, brochures, or websites to gain insight into organization functioning, problem solving, politics, culture, or other issues. Documents might include memoranda, meeting minutes, records, reports, policies, procedures, bylaws, plans, evaluation reports, press accounts, public relations material, vision statements, newsletters, and websites. Most organizations have a prolific amount of documentation, so using this type of data requires a clear focus and purpose. For example, Jack, our QuickCo consultant, reviewed performance trends and customer complaints to better understand the shipping department's problems. If Jack were trying to help an executive improve communication skills, he might review his client's email correspondence to determine how effectively and respectfully the executive communicates. This type of data collection can significantly inform the OD initiative. Documents provide several advantages, including access to historical data on people, groups, and the organization, as well as insight into what people think and do. Document analysis is an unobtrusive data collection method, which minimizes negative reactions. Certain documents might also prove useful for corroborating other data collected. For example, Jack could compare the executive's email communications with colleagues' accounts collected through interviews. On the other hand, documents may provide little insight into participants' thinking or behavior, or may not apply to general populations. They can also be unwieldy and overwhelming in the action research process. Confidential documents may sometimes be difficult to access. Additional data sources. Although interviews, questionnaires, focus groups, direct observation, and document analysis are the most commonly used OD data sources, other sources of information include the following. Tests and simulations. Structured situations to assess an individual's knowledge or proficiency to perform a task or behavior. For example, some organizations might use an inbox activity to assess delegation skills during a hiring process. Others use psychological tests to measure ethics, personality preferences, or behaviors. These instruments can be used in hiring, team development, management development, conflict resolution, and other activities. Product reviews. Reviews of products or services from internal or external sources. These can be useful for addressing quality or market issues. Performance reviews. Formal records of employee performance. These can be particularly useful for individual interventions that are developmental or for succession planning on an organization level. Competitor information and benchmarking. Comparative analyses of what competitors are doing regarding the issue under exploration. Examples might include salary, market, or product comparisons. Environmental scanning. Analysis of political, economic, social, and technological events and trends that influence the organization now or in the future. And critical incidents. Interviews that ask participants to identify a specific task or experience and pinpoint when it went well, when it did not go well, and what they learned. Critical incidents were first used in military pilot training to identify and eliminate mistakes. Section 4.6, Methods of Analyzing the Data. The most common types of research in OD are survey research using quantitative methods and qualitative inquiry that could employ interviews, focus groups, observation, document analysis, or a combination thereof. As you recall, quantitative methods are used to determine how much, while qualitative methods are used to determine how. We have already identified the many methods for collecting data. Now, what do you do with it? Data points are simply bits of information, until they are assimilated in ways that tell a story or provide deeper understanding of a phenomenon. For instance, employee responses on a survey about job satisfaction are just numbers on a page until interpreted. Once you know that 35% of respondents are only moderately satisfied and are clustered within a certain division or job classification, then you can begin to understand the scope of the problem and consider interventions. A consultant's job is to make sense of data and present it to the client. Such a presentation should be in plain language and in quantities that the client can easily manage. It is advisable to involve the client and other relevant organization members in the presentation of the analysis, because doing so promotes buy-in, collaboration, and accurate data interpretation. There are several steps to analyzing data effectively. These steps differ depending on whether you are doing qualitative or quantitative analysis. It is beyond the scope of this book to fully train you as a researcher, so it is a good idea to gain additional training and experience in this area if it interests you. Until you gain experience with data analysis, it is recommended that you partner with someone who is an expert. If you have access to a university or other organizational research team, this can be an easy way of both finding a research expert and developing a research partnership. Such relationships help bridge theory and practice and can be great opportunities to enhance your learning. There are also some suggestions for continued learning listed at the end of this chapter. Case study: Data Collection and Analysis at Jolt Transformers. Joe Lee of Design Solutions Consulting receives a phone call from Rex James of Jolt Transformers. "Rex, what can I do for you?" asks Joe, who has done work for Jolt in the past. "Joe, we've got a problem with our technicians," Rex replies. "We can't keep them. We hire them and train them, and then they go work for the competition for more money. Then the cycle repeats, and it seems we wind up hiring folks back again until they can jump ship for more cash. Our management team thinks they need more training. What makes you think that, Rex? Joe is skeptical that training is the solution in this case. She listens a bit longer and sets up a time to meet with Rex and his division CEO. During the meeting, Joe asks several questions about the extent of the problem and what steps have been taken to address it. The three agree that the first step is to collect more data to understand the scope of the problem. They decide on a three-pronged approach: a survey of technicians, interviews with key executives, and focus groups with selected technicians. These methods will provide both quantitative and qualitative data. Over the coming weeks, Joe and Rex work on developing a survey with a small team that includes technician supervisors, technicians, and human resource personnel. They administer the survey to each of the company's 75 technicians. The survey results show that 70% are dissatisfied with their careers at Jolt, and 62% are planning to apply elsewhere in the next year. Joe and Rex also develop interview questions for the executives and a format and questions for the technician focus groups. During the interviews, it becomes clear to Joe that the executives believe the problem is that the company lacks a training institute for technicians. A couple of executives want her to design a curriculum to train the technicians more effectively. Joe is highly skeptical of this assumption, however, because it runs counter to what she is learning from the technicians. Other executives express concern that the company is not investing appropriately in the development and retention of its workforce. Joe thinks they might be onto something. During the focus groups with technicians, Joe hears comments such as these: "There's no clear career path at Jolt. The only way to progress is to go elsewhere. The company doesn't seem interested in us at all. They just want us to produce. The faster, the better. The competing companies provide a much better orientation program and connect you with a mentor to help you develop your skills. It's a mystery what you have to do to get promoted around here. Instead of moving up, you might as well just plan to move out." During the weeks that Joe collects and analyzes data, she undertakes several measures to promote a thorough, effective analysis. Each is discussed as a tenet of effective analysis related to the case. Design a systematic approach, keep a data log. Joe works with the team from Jolt to design a process for collecting quantitative and qualitative data. As the data collection process unfolds, Joe keeps a detailed log of the steps taken, especially for the interviews and focus groups. These notes allow her to tweak the interview and focus group questions based on what she learns. When you use data logs, you can keep them in the form of a journal or official memoranda that highlight key steps, decisions, and emerging themes. These logs might include visual images of what you are learning, such as models, system diagrams, or pictures. Write notes to yourself as you analyze. Thoroughly documenting your procedures is good practice and should allow another person to step in and repeat your data collection and analysis procedures. Allow data to influence what is learned. Joe listens and watches carefully as she collects data. Her attention to detail offers her new insights into prevailing assumptions at play in the organization. She's able to add questions to the interviews and focus groups that push participants to think more broadly about the problem. For example, she pushes executives to provide evidence that a training institute would result in better retention of employees. When the executives find they cannot provide clear answers, they reflect more deeply on the problem. Joe is also able to probe more around the lack of development and retention activities going on in the organization. Constantly compare qualitative data. Constant comparison earned its name because it involves a repetitive process of comparing themes that appear in the data until the researcher arrives at a cogent list that satisfactorily explains the phenomenon. This involves careful study, note-making, and looking for patterns in the data. Having more than one set of eyes coding the data and generating themes helps verify the analysis. In the case of Jolt, two themes were found from the data analysis. Number one, technicians were dissatisfied with A, the lack of a career path, and B, the level of support for advancement and growth. Number two, Jolt was lacking A, long-term strategies for recruitment, retention, and development of technicians, and B, a strong orientation program. The focus groups at Jolt began to produce themes and patterns related to technicians' lack of clarity regarding career paths. Often, researchers will use technology to organize and compare qualitative data, such as NVivo, Atlas TI, or the Ruana method, Ruana 2005. This involves repeatedly reading the transcripts or other documentation and coding similar issues. For example, if you continually noted issues related to poor leadership, you would assign a code such as PL to data that speaks to that theme. As just mentioned, this approach is known as constant comparison. Constantly comparing the data allows you to identify themes you may have previously missed and also validate recurring ones. You should pay attention to all data, even data that does not make sense or fit the emerging themes. Sometimes, the outliers can provide unique insight that proves to be helpful in addressing the issue. Code data. Qualitative data is coded, and the codes will eventually be grouped into themes. This involves reading passages of the transcript and giving them codes. This is known as code data. For instance, Joe might have coded Jolt's transcripts with the following categories: job dissatisfaction, leadership, mentoring, recruitment, socialization, learning and development issues, and career progression. Once a series of themes has been established, it is best to narrow these down to a more manageable 3 to 5 ideas. Subgroups can be created under themes if necessary. You will likely wind up with more themes than you will ultimately want to share with the client. The client needs to find the initial analysis digestible and in accessible language. You may share additional analysis as it becomes relevant to client needs. Document findings in an accessible way for the client. Joe had dozens of pages of data, including survey results and interview and focus group transcripts. She distilled this information into specific key findings and recommendations that were not overwhelming to the client. Find ways to disseminate findings with other practitioners and researchers. The best research happens in organizations, yet it rarely gets shared further once the problem is solved. It is helpful to attend professional meetings and conferences and to write up your findings for other practitioners to review. This advances the OD knowledge base, promotes discussion, and elicits new questions. Section 4.7, Methods of Sharing Feedback, Data Analysis, with the Client. Like the action research process itself, feedback meetings require careful planning to keep the consultancy on track. As the consultant, you are responsible for identifying a meeting's key purpose and desired outcomes. For example, do you want the client to better understand the problem, agree on a course of action, confront some issues affecting the problem? Sharing feedback with the client involves determining the feedback meeting's focus, developing the meeting's agenda, addressing confidentiality concerns, recognizing different types of feedback, presenting feedback effectively, managing your consulting presence during the meeting, and anticipating defensiveness and resistance. Each of these will be discussed in this section. Determining the focus of the feedback meeting. Several issues should be considered when planning a feedback meeting. What outcomes do you seek? Do you want to enhance understanding of the problem? Obtain agreement on a course of action? Study the issue further. No matter the meeting's focus, there are at least two issues that must be incorporated into the feedback meeting design. Number one, data analysis presentation. And number two, discussion about the analysis and recommendations for future action. Keep your goals in mind as you plan the meeting. Structure it to help the client move to the next phase. Allow time to present results and engage the client in a conversation about the data. In the spirit of authenticity, plan ways to solicit feedback on your consultation during the meeting, perhaps by asking questions such as, "Are you getting what you need from me? Is this what you expected? And what don't you understand?" developing the meeting agenda. As you create the agenda, you will want to split the meeting into two parts: A, data analysis presentation, and B, dialogue about the analysis and next steps. Block's 1999 meeting agenda format for a feedback session has been adapted into the following. Number 1, restate the original contract, described in Chapter 3. Number 2, state the purpose, outcomes, and process for the meeting. Number 3, present the analysis and recommendations. Number 4, present recommendations. Number 5, ask for client reactions. For example, are you surprised by anything I've said? Or, is this meeting your expectations? Number 6, be authentic. Ask the client during the meeting, are you getting what you want? Number 7, make a decision on actions or next steps and assign tasks and dates. Number 8, address concerns and assess commitment. Number 9, reflect on whether your goals were met. Conduct a meeting evaluation and ask for feedback on your consulting. And number 10, close with support and a focus on the next steps. Block suggested beginning with a compelling statement that explains why the problem exists and outlines the consequences if no action is taken over the short and long term. Next, recommend solutions in collaboration with the client, identifying anticipated benefits. Once the feedback meeting is completed, it is a good idea to conduct a meeting post-mortem. This involves evaluating the meeting, reflecting on what happened, soliciting input from stakeholders, and seeking feedback on your consulting. Addressing confidentiality concerns. The agenda should be structured in a way that respects confidentiality and anonymity, especially when presenting data analysis. Consultants will invariably work with sensitive data. They have an ethical obligation to simultaneously provide the client access to the data, but also protect the confidentiality of the people who provided it. Consultants should verify data usage and confidentiality expectations in the contracting process outlined in Chapter 3. Detailing such expectations in writing allows everything to be spelled out should the client ever insist on viewing the raw data. Collecting sensitive data, such as an attitude survey in an organization where there is high employee dissatisfaction, requires taking appropriate research measures to protect the confidentiality and anonymity of participants. A consultant's credibility can be compromised if he or she lapses in the area of data confidentiality. It is especially important to protect confidential data when under pressure. A colleague once worked as an external consultant for a company whose president demanded raw data from an attitude survey that was highly negative. He insisted that he owned the data because he had paid for the survey. The consultant quit and took the data with her rather than violate her ethics and turn the data over to the president. Protecting confidentiality will enhance your integrity and authenticity. You can protect confidentiality by keeping your promise not to share raw data, protecting your data sources, for example, completed surveys, by keeping them in a secure location, and limiting access to the data only to individuals whom you trust and who need to work with it. Recognizing different types of feedback. Consultants recognize two broad types of feedback. Positive feedback involves sharing what the client is doing well or what is working in the organization. Negative feedback involves sharing what the client is doing badly or what is not working. It is important that the client hear the good things before the consultant delves too deeply into the opportunities to improve. However, not all positive feedback is helpful. Positive feedback that undermines problem-solving progress is known as destructive positive feedback. Examples include offering unwarranted praise or saying what the client wants to hear instead of what the client needs to hear. Destructive positive feedback is counterproductive to helping clients solve problems because it convinces them they are doing well enough and do not need to change. In contrast, positive feedback that helps the client is constructive positive feedback. Examples include describing what the client does well, what others appreciate, successes, and behaviors that are helpful to others. What types of destructive or constructive positive feedback have you received? Feedback that hurts the client is known as destructive negative feedback. Examples include put-downs, insults, or non-specific criticism. This type of feedback is not helpful and may even erode progress on the problem. Negative feedback that helps the client is known as constructive negative feedback. Examples include outlining what the client does badly, failures, behavior that hinders others, behavior that is uncomfortable for others, and specific criticism. You can probably recall receiving both forms of feedback and how they made you feel. Presenting feedback effectively during the meeting. It is a big job to analyze data and decide what to share at the feedback meeting. It is likely that you will not present all of the data collected. Cummings and Worley in 2018 suggested that feedback is most useful when it is relevant to the client and presented in an understandable and descriptive way. Clients also want information that is verifiable, significant, timely, and not overwhelming to digest. You will want to ensure that the data is balanced. Include the success data in addition to the failure data. It is also helpful to provide comparative data when available, such as cross-department comparisons or benchmarking with other competitors or industries. You should also be willing to collect more data as needed. Consultants should present feedback in a way that enables the client to hear it. Whether negative or positive, feedback should be constructive or helpful to the client. Regardless of the feedback shared, it must be delivered with respect. Feedback should never come across as hurtful or insulting. In all cases, feedback should be based on available evidence, the data that has been collected and analyzed. Block urged that it is important to be assertive and use language that is descriptive, focused, specific, brief, and simple. Avoid language that is judgmental, global, stereotyped, lengthy, or complicated. Managing your consulting presence during the meeting. This book has discussed the need for consultants to be authentic and to complete each phase of action research. How consultants give feedback is critical because it affects how well the client will hear and accept the message. Striking an effective stance during feedback involves being respectful, providing direct and constructive description, and anticipating resistance. It is imperative to respect the client. Hurtful feedback is not productive, so make sure the feedback is constructive and non-judgmental. In addition to being respectful, consultants should provide direct, constructive description. This involves being assertive and straightforward about the analysis. The feedback meeting is not the time to timidly sugarcoat results, particularly if they are negative. As discussed under types of feedback, there are ways to constructively deliver negative feedback. The way feedback is described will affect the client's receptivity to it. Describing a problem clearly, directly, and convincingly helps the client absorb the breadth and depth of the issue without getting overburdened in detail. Include data that links to both the root cause and the symptoms, often the presenting problem. It can be helpful to highlight data in areas where the client has the responsibility and authority to make changes. It is also beneficial to include data that the client views as important and that calls attention to problems where there is a commitment to change. For instance, if the organization has an ongoing initiative, such as work teams, showing evidence of their activities and results can validate the data and reinforce the value of the action research process in implementing change. It is also advantageous to anticipate aspects of the feedback that are likely to cause client defensiveness, and to come prepared to diffuse them. Do not allow the client to project frustration about the data onto you. You are just the messenger. You should also identify stakeholders who will be absent from the meeting and plan to follow up with them about the meeting's content and outcomes. Be prepared to deal with resistance as directly and constructively as you presented the data and invite the client's assessment of the problems and courses of action. Anticipating what might come up during the meeting helps a consultant effectively prepare for the unexpected. Managing defensiveness and resistance during the meeting. Clients often become defensive about feedback, particularly if it is negative or will require significant changes. For instance, suppose Janessa was assessing an organization's retention issues and had data indicating that women and people of color were leaving the organization due to discrimination and harassment. She might anticipate denial and defensiveness from a mostly white, male-dominated organization. Having benchmarking data handy on how other organizations have dealt with this issue would be one way Janessa could counteract this defensiveness. In addition to being defensive, clients might also resist making changes. A consultant might hear, "It will cost too much. We don't have time to do this," or, "This will never work here." A good way to respond to such sentiments is to push the client to consider the cost of not adopting the solution. A consultant might ask, "Do you still want to be dealing with this problem 6 months from now? What are you afraid of?" Or, "What is your opposition really about?" Pursuing a strong line of questioning helps the client see faulty reasoning in the resistance. Another tactic to thwart resistance is to invite those you anticipate will be the most resistant to attend the feedback meeting, so they become involved in determining the intervention and thus develop buy-in to the solution. In addition to anticipating defensiveness and resistance, consultants should make sure the feedback is as constructive and descriptive as possible. For example, instead of making negative, destructive, and vague statements, such as, "Your management structure isn't working," a consultant might say, "According to the survey, employees are confused about lines of authority and the vision for the organization." The second statement is non-judgmental and provides more detail than the first. Also, clearly describing authority lines and vision gives the client something tangible to work on. Consultants should determine feedback points that are likely to cause defensiveness and anticipate in advance of a meeting what form that defensiveness might take. They should also develop questions that will help the client express resistance or defensiveness. These might include, "What points of the feedback concern you?" or "Are there points you disagree with?" These questions will spark dialogue regarding the aspects of the feedback that are troubling to the group. When a consultant detects defensiveness and resistance, he or she should address it swiftly and tactfully, because doing so enhances the consultant's authenticity and credibility. Smoothly managing the feedback process is a key competency of an OD consultant. Use assessment, develop a force field analysis in your ebook to anticipate different types of support and resistance a consultant might encounter during a feedback meeting. Tips and wisdom: managing the feedback process. The client has a right to all the information collected. Use of data should be established in the contracting process, including confidentiality. Not all of the data collected will be used. It is a consultant's job to synthesize the data so that it is useful to the client. Include success data in addition to the failure data. Offer constructive feedback with respect. Respect confidentiality and anonymity. This enhances a consultant's integrity. Include data that calls attention to the root cause as well as the symptoms, often the presenting problem. Avoid sugarcoating data that the client may not want to face. Highlight data in areas where the client has responsibility and authority to make changes. Use data to highlight a manageable number of problems. Include data the client will view as important. Such data calls attention to problems where there is a commitment to change. Avoid inundating the client with detail. Avoid allowing the client to project frustration about the data onto you. Be prepared to deal with resistance. Invite the client's assessment of the problems and courses of action. Summary and resources. Chapter summary. Action Research is a recurring, collaborative effort between organization members and OD consultants to use data to resolve problems. The three phases of action research are planning, doing, and checking. Many types of OD theorists follow Lewin's model, although the number and names of steps may vary. Planning is an opportunity to conduct a performance gap analysis to examine the difference between what is and what should be. Benefits of the planning phase include setting the OD process up for success through careful analysis and diagnosis of the problem, engaging organization members from the beginning in the process of collaboration, ongoing learning and capacity building in the action research process, and prioritizing issues. The levels of analysis include the individual, group, organization, or system. Issues to address at each of these levels include purpose and task, structure, people, rewards, procedures, and technology. Planning is the first phase of action research and consists of 5 steps: identifying the issue, gathering data on the issue, analyzing the data, sharing feedback with the client, and planning action to address the issue. Different types of research answer different types of questions. Types of research include basic, applied, action, and evaluation. Basic research seeks to create new knowledge based on experiments and hypothesis testing. Applied research explores practical questions and seeks to improve practice. It may not necessarily create new knowledge. Action research addresses particular problems within specific contexts, such as an organization. It is also applied research because of its practical nature. Evaluation research assesses the value of programs, processes, or techniques and judges their effectiveness. A qualitative research methodology is used to understand how a phenomenon unfolds or occurs and to create meaning and understanding about the topic under study. A quantitative research methodology is focused on measuring how much or how many of something. Its goal is to interpret statistics so they are meaningful within the context they are derived from, such as an organization. An interview is a qualitative data collection method that solicits opinions, observations, and beliefs about a particular social phenomenon by asking the interviewee to reflect on questions. Questionnaires are quantitative data collection instruments that survey participants about their opinions, observations, and beliefs according to a standardized set of questions. Focus groups bring 8 to 12 participants together to collectively reflect on questions that are posed to the group, explore issues, and generate new ideas. Direct observations are conducted by watching the operations and interactions taking place in the organization. Document analysis is the use of relevant records, texts, brochures, or websites to gain insight into the way the organization runs, solves problems, manages politics, develops culture, and makes decisions. Multiple data sources exist to provide information when engaging in OD. The key is to find the methods that will yield the most useful data. The approach to data analysis will depend on the methods used to collect it. The case study about data collection and analysis at Jolt Transformers offered a realistic account of how to analyze data and modeled the following tips: be systematic, keep a data log, let the data influence how you learn and think about the problem, constantly compare data, code the data, document the findings so the client can understand them, and disseminate what has been learned. When planning to give feedback to the client, decide the focus of the feedback meeting based on the outcomes the client needs, such as better understanding of the problem, agreeing on a course of action, or deciding to study the issue further. Take time to develop a detailed meeting agenda that includes the data analysis and presentation and a conversation about the analysis and next steps. Make efforts at every step of the research process to protect confidentiality and ensure the client is comfortable. Be cognizant of what type of feedback is shared. Consultants must share both negative and positive feedback with clients. They should avoid feedback that is positively or negatively destructive, such as saying what the client wants to hear, glossing over problems, or sharing hurtful information. Ensure that the information presented to the client is relevant, succinct, verifiable, timely, and not overwhelming. Consultants should strike a composed, confident, respectful, and competent stance during meetings. These are imperative in helping the client view the consultant as an authoritative partner. And plan to diffuse resistance and defensiveness during the meeting. For more exercises, resources, and citations, visit your ebook. End of Chapter 4, Part B.